Good afternoon. Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a league of nations among other internet radio talk stations. Voices of the people, united we roar. Today is March 31st, 2008. And now, the program you've been talking about since last time you heard her, Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein on Kids, Tweens, Teens, a Positive Psychologist Looks at All Three. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Good afternoon, Lillian. I'm so glad to be back. And yes, welcome everybody to Kids, Tweens, and Teens. And yes, I am a positive psychologist, a happiness coach. I've been a school psychologist and a teacher, mother, wife, woman, all these things. I think I deserve a gold star plus a certificate in training for who knows what, but let's say definitely to know something in the positive psychology end of things of how to bring up our next generation. So this is what we're going to talk about. My show for almost a year had focused on happiness for women only, and we have some great archive shows both on my website, enchantedself.com, and Lillian's website, internetvoicesradio.com, for happiness for women only. But I decided it was time to get back even more to basics, the basics of kids, tweens, and teens. And today I have on a very, very special guest. I'm going to be talking to Vanessa Van Petten. Vanessa is a young woman, I guess fully an adult in her early 20s, but actually the work that she's going to be talking about was developed when she was still a teenager, which I think is just absolutely phenomenal. And we'll be talking about her wonderful, exciting, very helpful resource book, You're Grounded, for both kids, teens, I would imagine tweens, and their parents. And we'll also be talking about how she developed it, why she developed it, and some of the insights she has. So welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I just can imagine by the time you're 40 or 50, the types of credentials and work you will have done, it's just, I just hope I'll be around to see it.
It's been a whirlwind, that's true.
Yes, yes. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in writing a book that is really a dense book. It's researched well, it's written well, it has a tremendous amount of advice and research and orientation for parents and teenagers. Tell us the story.
Oh, well, thank you, first of all. That's so nice. I'm 22 now, so still in my baby 20s, but I wrote it when I was 17. I think that I was a pretty typical teenager. A lot of parents go, well, you were writing a book, you couldn't have been that typical. But, you know, in the sense that I wasn't really a goody-goody. I wasn't, like, a bad kid. And I was going through, sort of like in between, I was going through a really rough time with my parents, just angry at them. I feel like they didn't get me. They didn't understand me. My dad was so strict when it came to me and boys. Oh, my gosh. Stayed up at night worrying that there was me in the world and there was boys in the world. So, you know, we didn't get along in that sense. And I was fighting with them all the time. And in that time period when I was about 15 or 16, two of my friends got expelled for having marijuana. And when I talked to them afterwards, they had ruined their chances of getting into college, definitely getting a good job is going to be on their resume. They were getting involved with the cops. And I asked them, you know, what were you thinking? What were you thinking carrying this to school? And they were like, oh, we wanted to piss off our parents. I was like, that is the worst reason I have ever heard to ruin your own life. and something sort of clicked for me in that moment, because these were great kids. These were really, I think, nice boys who just decided to do something because they thought it would make their parents mad when they really didn't realize it would ruin everything for them. And so I started to talk to other teenagers, my friends, parents, and ended up interviewing, I think it was like 700 or 750 different teenagers, asking them, if you could tell your parents anything, what would it be, and why haven't you already told them? And, I mean, the answers I got were better than I ever could have come up with on my own, and I started to, like, kind of put together this manual for parents because I realized that there were so many things that we had to say. There were so many things I wanted to tell my parents, yet I refused to tell them, which makes no sense. I'm sure, Dr. Barber, you always are dealing with kids who will tell you things but won't tell their kids. I mean, they won't
sure.
tell their parents.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that was sort of what I was dealing with. And I was like, well, if we can't talk to them, I might as well write it down for them. You know, at this point, I was starting to feel sort of bad for my parents because I was such a, you know, pain. I would come home from school and I wouldn't tell them a single thing about my day. I wouldn't, you know, open up to them about anything. And they were just dying to hear what was going on with me. And I feel like it was going on for all of my friends' parents. So, and then I went to Emory University in Atlanta and realized that I really loved doing that. And so I decided to publish it when I graduated this past May, and I just recently published it and started my blog for parents on all the current issues that are going on right now in the news with teenagers and talking about what it's actually like from the trenches of being a teenager because I have a lot of teen groups I work with. So that's kind of the evolution of how it came to be.
So when you were in high school, were you already compiling the notes as you interviewed the 750 kids?
Yeah, I actually wrote the whole book when I was 17 and then didn't end up doing anything with it. I just sort of passed it around to friends, gave it to a, you know, parents who I thought were having trouble with their teenagers. Everyone was like, you have to publish it, you have to publish it. But I was so excited to be going to college and be away from my parents. The last thing I wanted to do was publish a book on parents. So,
so you know, then how did it come alive again to actually get to publication?
So when I was actually a Mandarin major, an international business major in college, which has nothing to do with what I'm doing now, but I think that it was interesting because I started to go down that path and realized that I had so much fun talking to other people my age and talking to parents and writing the book. And I was like, that's what I love to do. And my career counselor at Emory was like, you know, what did you really, really find passionate in your life? And I was like, that. I love doing that. So that's when it sort of came back alive again, and I realized that's really what I wanted to do, and that there was sort of, there needs to be sort of a bridge between the two because, you know, teenagers will only open up to their parents so much. So if they open up to me, at least I can deliver some of the information to parents and go, okay, like even though they won't tell you themselves, here's kind of what's going on when they cheat. Here's
right,
kind of
right.
what's going on when they, you know.
I think this is just so fascinating, and I have to put something in perspective here. I hope sometime we can meet and maybe we could even be on a panel or do a workshop together because it's kind of fascinating in terms of human development, you and myself. Now, you wrote this very, very dense book. I read a great deal of it, not the entire thing because I need a paper copy. My eyes tired a little bit with the PDF, but that's the aging factor of eyes. But anyway, I was fascinated with the research you compiled, particularly what struck me was the research around the adolescent brain compared to the adult brain. You know, this is really sophisticated research that is just kind of trickling down to the public as we speak.
Yes.
You know, and it's critical because if somebody is thinking differently than you are, you're not going to get far if you just try to use your arguments. You know, you're not going to sit down with your favorite pet and try to describe a museum you saw.
Right, right.
You know, and even things like politics, they're discovering that when you try to discuss, try to convince someone to become, say, a Republican or a Democrat, you're sort of wasting your breath, although it can be interesting conversation, because the parts of the brain that are lighting up are all the parts tied into emotions, and they are not swayed by logic.
That's so interesting. See, and I think that especially when I talk to teenagers now, because now I'm sort of in the in-between phase, so I feel like I should write another book called, you know, Don't Tell My Parents But. You know, I feel like
yes.
teenagers are sort of like verbal vomit whenever I sit with them about
the title, definitely.
Yeah, about everything they do. And, you know, one of the things that they say, they just don't get me, they just don't understand me, is I actually say, you know, this is not just your parents. There's actually something scientific going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, oh, my mom is crazy. And I'm like, you know, let's think about this for just a second. And I have this in the book, too. You're going through your hormonal puberty, and a lot of moms are also going through menopause at the same time. The symptoms are exactly the same. Of course it's a war zone in your house. Like, of course. And they kind of laugh, and they go, yeah, I guess that's true. And I'm like, so when you feel all crazy and confused in your head, imagine that your mom is feeling the same way, but she's had a whole lifetime behind her, so she really doesn't want to feel that way. And they go, oh, yeah, that sort of makes sense. So right. Science can be sort of a good rationale for why we think so differently.
Oh, it can really help. And I'm thinking, you know, I also wrote very dense material when I was young and in college and graduate school, never attempted to really publish it. But when I finally began to write my first book, The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy, which is a positive psychology book for therapists and their clients, which comes out of really feminist traditions of helping women understand how we lose our sense of self and how we don't take enough time to replenish and how we have to really access and congratulate and applaud all the wonderful sides of our talents and potential. And, you know, it's actual work because society really isn't helping us.
Yeah.
If you're young and beautiful, society's all in your favor, but it's a long life, and there are lots of issues that happen to women over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So that book was, I will say, you know, extremely intricately deep, and I worked on it passionately for a couple of years, and I'm very, very proud of my first baby.
And okay. I would be happy to be on a panel with you sometime. I think it would be so interesting.
Yes, yes. And now, and what's happened, though, is I'm 12, 13 years older, and when I came to have this vision about writing the truth, I'm a girl, I'm smart, and I know everything, what was going through my mind is, let me go to the most simple level that still has profoundness in it, and see if I can reinforce for girls their sense of self, all the things I talked about in The Enchanted Self, and also help women get back to a self-love and a sense of joy and fun and wisdom that they can recapture that is their own, that they may have tended to let go. And so this book, my little book, you know, is so simple, and yet it's deep. I'm not saying it's not deep, but isn't it interesting how our styles have differed to try to get to the same messages?
Yeah, also, I was just talking about your book on my blog. I have a pretty popular parenting blog right now just because I expose what's going on with teenagers and sometimes say some a little bit controversial things, but nothing too bad. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about your book with some of the readers in one of our live chats, and I was saying that, you know, I got it last week, and I sat down with it, and I go, okay, you know, it's a small book. How could it have such a big title? And that's a big title. That says a lot. Mm-hmm. So I sat down to read it, first of all, you got me with the first line, you know, that I'm in love, and I was like, wow, did she get my old journal? No, this looks just like what I wrote in my first journal, except, you know, for me, it was Josh, not Paul.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm reading it, and I'm going, oh, this is such a sweet little dessert book. And then as I kept reading, I was like, no, this isn't a dessert book. This covers much more than a dessert could ever cover, but it is read like it's so easy. And so I think that was something that I really like, is that it is really simple, but you talk about some really, really big issues that, especially for teen girls, and I work with these 11 and 12-year-olds, and even though they love painting their nails and they love going to the mall with me, they are dealing with self-esteem stuff and, you know, do we want to be leaders? Do we want to be strong? Am I okay to raise my hand in class and answer this question, or do I just want to play dumb? They're dealing with all that in such a big way that it's really important to be able to speak their language.
Right, exactly. And I think I'm also hoping, and so far it's been confirmed, that when a mother or an aunt or a grandma reads this book, it helps her get into the mindset of the younger person.
Yeah.
Which she was once, but she, you know, as you talk about in your book, we're in different mindsets at different stages of life.
Yeah, it's totally different. It's just totally different. It's so hard to remember. I mean, I'm around teenagers all day long, and I still find myself surprised when I get back into a company of 14-year-old girls. I still find myself going, oh, I forgot about that. I forgot about the giggling. I forgot about the running to the bathroom. I forgot, but it wasn't even that long ago.
That's right. That's right. And I remember I had this girlfriend, and whenever we would meet in junior high or high school, we would just get hysterical. We'd hug each other, and we'd just be laughing. And my father was the superintendent of schools in where I was in public school. And one day he walked by us when we were in the middle of this ecstatic moment or two that we had, you know, like at least once a day, I don't know over what. And he was like appalled. He just couldn't believe that his daughter was cracking up this way, you know. And, of course, most kids don't get seen by their parents, at least in school, under these settings. But, yeah, it's there's so many wonderful things that and some of them are not so wonderful, as you found out interviewing the kids.
Yeah.
Did you find that some of the kids really, like these two boys, are almost in or they are actually in really dangerous waters?
You know, at the time, it didn't feel like it, but looking back, I think yes, because at the time, it felt like these were kids who I was going out with. They were kids I was in classes with. You know, really, I considered them my peers. Even people, you know, I did interviews across the country, even when I was in D.C. doing interviews. Even then, I felt like I could go to the movies with these kids or go to their school dance with them. And so at the time when they would say to me, yeah, I do pot occasionally, or, you know, sometimes I cheat on tests, but it's really just because, you know, the teacher doesn't even read them anyway, so why should I actually have to study? You know, at the time, I was like, yeah, okay, I guess that makes sense. You know, I'll write it down, and I guess that makes sense. But looking back now, and the most important part of going back and just revisiting the book was seeing where all those kids ended up. You know, I got to interview these kids who might have been on the cusp of doing drugs or might have been on the cusp of maybe being a little bit promiscuous or, you know, sneaking out. And then did it actually affect their lives? Did it really ruin things for them? And a lot of the kids, it did push them into a more destructive path, especially the ones who felt very distant from their parents. And that's one of the major principles of every article I write. If you just read one article from my blog, you'll see that.
Tell us. Put it into words.
That it's always about putting in the time with your kids. I mean, it actually is, I think, quantity over quality. I know that sounds really crazy, but it's hard, very, very hard to have quality time with your kids. You know, a lot of we're horrible. Sometimes we're really awful sometimes, and it feels like you sit with us and we just don't do a thing, you know, but just sitting and watching a movie with us and sitting and having those family dinners or driving us to and from school, like that time really adds up. And I noticed that it was the kids that had the most quantity of time with their parents that ended up sort of surmounting the, do you want to try this? Do you want to do this? Do you not want to do your schoolwork right now? And getting past it and growing up and deciding they did want to be, you know, a whole person and a balanced person who didn't do drugs versus the kids who ended up being tempted into that and going away to college or going away after high school and getting into some very, very bad situations. It was those kids who didn't have a lot of parent time.
This is really critical information, and psychologists and social workers have not been helpful in this dimension because they tend to basically encourage people, women and men under stress with busy lives, quality is what matters.
No.
Now, maybe with younger kids, there is a period of time where if you can have some quality time every day and they have really safe, wonderful caretakers like a grandma or someone who truly loves them.
Yes, agreed.
It may be okay more or less, but I think what you're saying in the teen years, just being around really matters.
Right, and also, I mean, I look back and thank goodness I was never tempted by drugs or alcohol. It just wasn't my thing, and my siblings, it was the same way. I have an older brother and I have two younger siblings, and thank goodness it doesn't appeal to us. And people will ask, you know, who are close to my family, they'll say, gosh, you have four kids, and none of them, you know, we did our bad things. I'm not saying that we were angels. You know, we had our own things that weren't so good, but that just didn't appeal to us. And I really think it was because we absolutely knew that no matter where we were, we'd have to come home and we'd have to look our parents in the eye. They would look right at us and they'd say, what did you do tonight? You know, and like they were around when we were on the phone with friends or talking about things. We always knew that they were in the house. They could have been listening or they were just downstairs, you know, or they were sitting there while we were watching TV. And if our friends were over, they were like, great, have your friends over. We're going to be here. And just knowing that they were there, it really keeps you in check. And also, I mean, there's something to be said, and I don't know, you know, I'm not a psychologist. I'm sure that you have much more insight into this than I do, but there is something very much to be said for my parents care enough about me to be home. You know,
right.
my dad worked very, very late, and he would actually come home for dinner and then go back to work. And there was something to be said for that.
Yeah, I think there really is, that it shows that you care enough, and time does have meaning. You know, I think that in our busy society where everyone is multitasking, there's this little bit of warped perception that if I can't calculate what I'm gaining from this half hour, these 2 hours, this day, then I guess it was wasted.
Oh, my gosh, you just described something that I so grapple with every day. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and that very often it's not wasted. First of all, if it's just you, you may just need to sit and stare into space, you know, and get nothing done that day.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about a family group, it's that sense almost like just being with other living people that just can tolerate you enough to hang around, you know. It's important. We don't like to feel isolated or that somebody thought, you know, something else in their lives was just a bit more important.
Oh, and totally. And also something you said that really struck me was you said just being around other living people. You know, we spend so much time online, and I will be the first to admit I check my Facebook 45 to 50 times a day. You know, I'm the first to, I spend all day online, and there is, especially now with kids, with the PSPs and the Game Boys and the cell phone and the IMs and the texts and the computer and the laptop and the computers at school, and it's like there's so much screen time. And also, you know, I'm sure know this more than anyone, that we have horrible highs and lows, you know, as teenagers, where we could be sitting and watching a movie with you. And or no, just sitting, let's just say sitting and I'm watching something on TV and you're at your desk, you know, parents' desk. You're not even doing something together. You're just in the same room together. And that actually I would consider quantity time. It's not quality time, it's quantity time. But there might be a second in that movie where your teenager will say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe she's wearing that. Mm-hmm. And the parent can turn around and be like, ugh, it's so gross. Just that alone can make a huge difference. Just that one interaction, because it's spontaneous, and you're saying, the parent's saying, okay, I'm sort of listening, and also it's about a body image, it's about a self-image, so that there's little comments like that that your teenager is not going to sit down necessarily and have a heart-to-heart with you. That might be the next best thing, and that only comes when you're in proximity with them a lot.
That's right, and I think there are other subtle messages going on, even something like if I'm sitting in the same room, I'm basically saying, I'm content that you're watching that show, and I'm not judging you.
Yes, exactly. And I'm letting you watch it and letting you laugh, and I'm here, but I approve.
So, wow, you've shared some extremely meaningful things about being a parent.
I mean, I don't know everything. I just know how my friends turned out and how people in the book turned out. So,
it's very important information. Tell us very briefly what you're doing today and how people can find you, so because we're drawing to a close.
I know, it's so sad. It went so fast.
Yeah.
I am hopefully writing another book this summer, so I'm going to be writing a book on divorced families, since I came from a divorced family, from the kids' perspective. And I actually, my blog, which I hope that everyone will go check out because it's a lot of free articles that kind of go along with the book and are very current. And I do a roundup of the news from across the web that is important for parents for, you know, Facebook privacy details or new websites that your kids might be on that you need to go check out or teen trends that are happening. So I do that once a week also.
That's critical.
Yeah, my website is onteenstoday.com. So
now, is that your blog too?
Yeah, it's my website, my blog. I have a bunch of free resources. I'm going to be reviewing Dr. Barbara's book later this week, so definitely look for that. And you can email me on there on the onteenstoday.com site. I have my email address. I have a link to Your Grounded to buy it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And also, you know, I always love to take questions from my readers. A lot of my posts come from parent suggestions saying, my kid was just caught blank, you know, or she has a school mm-hmm. dance coming up. What do I do? And so I'll actually write a post on it. So I welcome all the reader suggestions.
Terrific, terrific. Well, it's just gone so fast. I hope we'll be together again chatting one of these days, Vanessa.
Yes, maybe a panel.
Oh, yes, I like that. And it's just fascinating. And you really said things that I hadn't quite put the way you've put it, but from now on I'm going to really press on my clients' quantity and quality with teenage kids.
Yes. Oh, good. Oh, and, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. And this is Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein signing off for Kids, Tweens, and Teens. A positive psychologist looks at all three. And come and find me on EnchantedSelf.com. And please go to Amazon to look at and hopefully buy my new book, The Truth, I'm Smart. The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. Bye for now.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. And if you want to listen to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and her guest Vanessa all over again, please go over to http://internetvoicesradio.com. On the left-hand side of the page, you'll find the word Archives. Click on that. A list of names will appear, Dr. Barbara Becker's among them. The audio ought to be up within an hour or two. If you want to download the MP3 stream, go over to the right-hand side of the page where you see VIP Programs. Click on that. Sign up as a member, and for $2.60, you can download the MP3 stream. This is a revenue-sharing program. Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein gets one half, and PIBTR gets the other half to help run operational expenses because this is a for-profit station. If you want a hard copy, go contact Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And before you go away, I have this to say from 1756, from Maxims, Characters, and Reflections. We confess our faults in the plural and deny them in the singular. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, the next scheduled program begins at 8 o'clock tonight with Janet Elaine Smith, sponsored by Star Publish. Check them out, http://starpublishllc.com. And Marketing for Fun and Profit, followed by The Screaming Woman with Tony Quest, and rounding up the evening is Tom Zark and Lillian Caldwell's 30 Minutes Poetry program. So thank you very much for listening, and remember, keep listening. Goodbye.